Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing a wide range of research projects in which our academics are currently involved. With me today is Dr. Valerie Sollers, Dean of the Faculty of Education here at the University. She's here today to talk about EMEC, the European Masters in Early Childhood Education and Care. Welcome, Dr. Sollers.
Thank you.
EMEC, another of those acronyms of the European Union. What does it stand for?
Okay, thank you, Tricia, for the invitation. EMEC stands for a European Master's Degree in Early Childhood Education and Care. It came about predominantly because we definitely were feeling the need in the local context to start training or to develop training which professionals working in the field of early childhood should have, even at a master's level, in recognition of the very deep, insightful knowledge which people who work with young children need to have in order to afford and provide good quality care programs. On our own, unfortunately, in Malta, the expertise in the area is quite limited, and we're working on that. I now have colleagues here at the university within the department who are also continuing their studies and specializing in the area. So in recognizing the need to develop a master's program, we also had the need to tap into funds from the EU, which actually came about incidentally. I actually sought out the support of other colleagues in other countries. And we met up, we had discussions, how can we go about this? And the idea of submitting a proposal for a joint European master's degree came about. It's important to realize what I just said in the sense that it's a joint degree.
Yes, I was going to comment on that because joint degrees are always a little bit problematic.
Well, I prefer to say challenging at this stage, maybe a more diplomatic way of saying that. I think joint degrees have definitely come to the fore, and we know that with a number of EU meetings, it is something which the Commission is trying to put forward with a number of, you know, reasons for doing so. It will help mobility of the EU citizens. It will help recognition of degrees by different institutions. From an academic point of view, it will also encourage dialogue, discussion, professional reflections in the area which is being reviewed. So in our case, this has been a wonderful experience, not only for the student participants in the program, but even for the academics and my colleagues who have been involved, because we actually got to know more, we had to reflect more about what early childhood education in all its ramifications and implications is all about in different countries. And it's not a matter of comparing yourself to see whether you're better or worse off than others, but in realizing how things are done, the cultural implications, the societal implications in the field, reflecting also on our own personal beliefs. And hopefully as a result of these reflections and discussions, you obviously then change your practices and improve your practices in the field in which you're working.
You were saying that you started off the idea by contacting colleagues. Did you go specifically for colleagues in certain countries? How did the partnership really evolve?
Okay. First of all, it's good to say that this was a three-year project funded by the EU. We got the approval in October 2005, which therefore means that September 2008 saw the closing time of project time. I started actually by dropping the idea to one of my Swedish colleagues, partly because we have worked already in the past on several other things together. We belong to the same European Association for Early Childhood Education. And this is how we mentioned or targeted people to widen the group, as it were, on the basis of work we had been doing together in the past. Suffice it to say that four of the six institutions had been invited to Malta in 2001 when I had organized an international symposium in early childhood education. So the contacts had been maintained, different exchange programs, working with undergrad students, study visits had been going on in the interim. We did, as it turns out, actually have an interesting mix, because we've got Sweden and Norway, Germany, Ireland and Scotland, and Malta forming this group of six working on this project. As it turns out, three of the institutions already have or had existing master's programs in early childhood education and care. For three of us, it was something completely new.
Is that an advantage or a disadvantage, actually?
It was an advantage because for the newer ones, if we can say that, we obviously needed the support of the others who had gone down the route already, who had the experience. But they also saw the advantage in joining this master's program because of the international dimension. And that is something which is definitely a strength. Of course, it raised certain issues later on when it came to recruiting students.
In fact, I was going to ask you, where did the students come from?
Well, we have, because this was run as a pilot project, and it was the first time we're running a course, as a pilot project vis-a-vis the EU and the funding. But obviously for the students, this is very much a real course, like all the other academic courses held at university. So we limited it to 30 participants. Knowing full well that these are going to be mature students, I mean, it's postgraduate studies we're talking about, and therefore we wanted to offer it as a full-time course, a two-year full-time course, to try and get as much of the course content done while the project was still running, but at the same time being fully conscious that many of the people we'll have lots of other life commitments, which we all do, whether it's family commitments. Some people could afford to give up their job for 2 years. Some people had to maintain some form of work commitments as well. And that proved to be a very interesting mix. So in terms of eligibility, we left that up to the different countries. We limited the intake to 5 students per country for a maximum of 30 students. And actually, now that the course is 1 year of the course is over, most of the taught components are ready. It is quite encouraging to say that we have a cohort of 27 students. So although they are mature, they've got family, work commitments, or focusing on their studies exclusively, we did not have a high attrition rate. So we have been able to support the students. They have been able to support themselves, and maybe we'll talk in a while about the way the course has been conducted because of this international dimension. But I think in terms of, you know, helping the students and seeing them through their studies, it has been a very positive experience for them. If I may add, one other reason why eligibility criteria had to be left up to the at the national level was because of the different backgrounds in early childhood education that people have. So, for example, in Norway and Sweden, they do have a tradition of an undergraduate program strictly focusing on early childhood education and care. Countries like Malta and Germany don't have that tradition. So if, in terms of eligibility criteria, we're going to say, you know, definitely a first degree exclusively in early childhood education and care, that would have seen a number of countries not being able to participate. So we have related degrees, we have relevant degrees, which may have had partial focus on early childhood education and care, because they are mature students. We were assuming that they have work experience, which is related, and this is why we now have a mixed cohort and batch of students who are getting along very well together.
And when you say together, where will they be together?
Okay. The course actually had 8 taught components, each worth 10 ECTSs. So again, the advantage of developing a course together within the Bologna structure and therefore adhering to the ECTS system, allowing for transferability and mobility of the students if they so want to later on. Because of the international dimension, and as we said, the nature of the students, the type of the course, early childhood education, unfortunately, and true to its nature, we have female students. So that brings along family commitments, work commitments, you know, the works. We realized we couldn't have students traipsing around Europe for one semester in the different institutions. That might sound ideal, but in a real world, it's not as easy to achieve. So we had two study modules which were taught, or at least introduced to the students, through intensive programs. In an intensive program, for the benefit of the listeners, you again apply for separate funding from the EU, but under the auspices of national agencies. And through that funding, it supports the mobility of the students for a short period, minimum of 2 weeks.
From when you say support, do you mean
financial support for traveling and their accommodation when they are in another country? And some funding also goes for the organization of the intensive program. Because of our previous experience, mine specifically, when I was involved in other projects and we expected people to start getting to know each other online in a virtual world, that was not highly successful unless they had met each other in a face-to-face situation earlier. So the first intensive program was also the first study unit of the course, and we aptly chose professional reflections. We wanted these 2 weeks to serve for students to get to know each other, to get to know the lecturers, I mean my colleagues, we knew each other but they didn't, to become familiar with the virtual learning environment, which was the platform we were going to use for subsequent modules, and that's when they had to get to grips with Moodle, which is the platform which we're hosting. They needed also to start reflecting on what it means to be part of an international culture of researchers working in the field of early childhood education. So there was a strong element of constructing and co-constructing the course. As colleagues, we were learners as much as the students are. Yes, we brought our experience, our years and maturity, our professional workings and academic work and research to the fore, but students brought also their own wealth of diverse perspectives from where they were coming from, their own backgrounds and their own working in the various spheres of early childhood. So two intensive programs. One was the first one in October 2007. We actually got everybody to Malta for 2 weeks. And that helped the students, you know, really gel and form this community. After that, the subsequent five modules were online. So the students and this community was developing by exchange, not just of email, but through chats, through fora, through Skype, international conversations going on. We tried to keep the phone to a minimum because the students were grouped for a number of assignments. There were national groupings and international groupings for different tasks which they were set in the various study modules. They had to share their reflections. It included whether it's going out to schools to visit, to childcare, daycare centers, whatever preschool setups are available, and coming back with their thoughts and sharing those views and ideas. And in this way, students were encouraged to talk about what are perspectives on childhoods, how do we address issues related to diversity and equality, the evolutions of early childhood, historically, where does all this come from? Because that was another interesting dimension for the program itself. European or early childhood education has a strong European origin with Froebel, Montessori, Susan Isaacs, Robert Owen. Yet the Anglo-American world seems to dominate, you know, what is happening with programs like HiSCOPE, for example, or Sure Start or an Early Start. And we wanted to give that European heritage and framework a good chunk of what it is that we're doing. So the different issues were being discussed through the study units, as we said, using Moodle as a virtual learning environment. And then in September 2007 came the next, so practically a year later, we had the second intensive program. And that was held in Glasgow for 2 weeks, and it focused on aesthetics in children, in childhoods, in early childhood.
Before continuing to hear about this MEC program, I'd like to remind listeners that this is Research Matters, and I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I'm talking to Dr. Valerie Solis, Dean of the Faculty of Education. So you were telling me about the second part of the course. What did that involve?
The second part of the course started with this intensive program in Glasgow. Students hadn't seen each other physically for a year. although, as an offshoot, some had actually taken the initiative to go to study visits in other people's, in other countries. So one of the Maltese students went on a study visit under her own steam to Sweden. We had one of the Norwegians coming back to Malta in April. I believe one of our other Maltese students went to Ireland. So students found ways and means of traveling, supporting each other, helping each other out. I mean, they put each other up at their home in order to help themselves understand the learning environment vis-a-vis early childhood they were coming from. Currently, the students are doing a research methods module, and this will help them with the final part of the studies, which is a dissertation. So at this point in time, they're all engaged with research, how to conduct, deepening their understanding. Of course, they would have done something at the undergraduate level, but deepening their understanding of research methodology, what is appropriate research methodology with children, how to give children a voice, because that has become an important dimension in the research with young children, children as participants. And from January onwards, all the students will be working with the different supervisors on the research project.
And these are, as you say, mature students, so they must have a great motivation.
Yes.
Sort of feeling of enthusiasm that would make them make the effort to do extra, really.
Yes, definitely they do. I think as a group, as a cohort, you do see differences. And yes, as tutors, you know, we take a step back and do communicate and liaise what our feelings are about the group. You would see some students coming out stronger than others, as in any other cohort of students you would have. But yes, they have had a high commitment towards the work that they are doing. They owed it to themselves. I mean, they registered, they were eligible, they applied for it. But because of the nature of the group activities and group tasks they were given, they owed it to each other. And this was the beauty of creating a community. If you're in a group assignment or a group task, and you're expected to post your reflections, I don't know whether it's a shortcoming or a strength of Moodle, but it pretty well shows up quickly who the participants are, how often you're logging in, and what it is that you're saying. I mean, it's one way of keeping track, you know, this is my contribution. So I do guess students feel bad if you're part of a group, but you didn't volunteer much. And actually, this was another learning process for them when it came to paired work as well as group work. To what extent do I, in a way, interfere or correct, and how do I go about suggesting to my colleague, you know, that maybe you can say something differently, or what you are saying, yes, is appropriate, but in this context, we need to modify things. So there was learning at different levels, not just focusing on
skill development in various ways. Well, so much for the idea that online learning is isolating then.
No, definitely it is not isolating. I mean, maybe because also of the time frame we were working in. As I mentioned earlier, we offered it the first time now as a 2-year full-time program, which means it was very intensive. In order to fit in the 60 ECTS study units in the first year and subsequently in the second year, it is 120 ECTS program. Basically, we had about 6 weeks for a study module, and immediately that closes, the next one starts. And in fact, there was a time, I mean, we must admit, that the students were finding it really, really hard going. We had internal discussions on, can we give them a break? No, regulations don't allow, you know, for you to just give them a break here and there. Maybe the number of tasks we are giving them. Because really there was no stopping from one study unit to another. The time, you know, time rolls by, 6 weeks are over, and the new one unfolds. So they were being kept on their toes all the time. Another interesting perspective, and this is where the perspectives from different universities come in. In fact, we will not be opening the course again. We haven't opened it now for a second cohort. And we are going to take some time to evaluate the whole learning experience, the learning process, as well as the content of what was going on. We all would like to start the program again, hopefully in October 2010, with a proper thorough evaluation. And probably one of the things we're going to realize is that because of the demands and because of the age of the people coming and their own commitments, maybe either offer it as a part-time course, or where universities and staff, you know, and the resources are available, have it running both as a part-time and an online option. It will always be a program where online studies or discussions, chats and fora will play a dominant role. As I said, it will be feasibly, you know, practically not very feasible for people to be traveling around for a number of reasons. But at the same time, you have the benefit that you have a high quality degree, which at the end of the day is going to be recognized not only by your home institution, but by a number of institutions.
What was the division of labor as far as creating these aims and objectives
okay.
is concerned?
We started off by having a meeting. Actually, the first meeting took place in Oslo, where we started brainstorming what could be the reasons for developing such a program and the objectives for having that. And that was at the stage when we formulated a proposal, which we then submitted to the Commission to bid for funding. We continued discussing the content of the program in various subsequent meetings. Once the funding came through, the first 2 years of the project time were actually dedicated by contractual agreement to the development of the program. So we took 2 years to develop this program. And yes, it is not a joke to develop. It's not something which you dream, you know, or comes out of a hat. It's not there one day and it is there the next. So it was discussing the content which we would like to have, taking into consideration the different histories which we were all coming from. Some of the countries taking part have a long history and tradition of early childhood education. If we mention Germany with Froebel, if we mention Scotland with Robert Owen and Burns. But for a number of us, we're basically at the threshold of realizing the impact early childhood education has. There is also the dimension of, with the dimension of time, comes also the dimension of looking at childhoods. What do we understand with childhoods and children over time? So we actually got even the students to think about what it was like for them growing up as a child, what it would be like for us growing up as children, obviously being older than the students, and how we compare that to childhoods nowadays. So there is a wider impact of early childhood education on society. It is generally seen and linked to the movement of women in society, because obviously of all the child rearing practices which dominated in a number of contexts and countries. And therefore, all this discussion was going on in a group. All the colleagues were having these discussions together. Then we did share teams to come up with a preliminary course description. But then it was together that we got the course descriptions finalized, agreed on an approved reading list for each course description. With the reading lists, we wanted to make sure that as much as possible, a lot of the European research was being flagged and introduced. So we had compulsory reading lists and supplementary reading lists. And in choosing the reading lists, we tried to go for the research which has been done by ourselves, I mean, myself and the colleagues who are in the program, and also other colleagues in our countries who have been working in the field. And in that way, we try to put forward this European dimension and heritage. When it came to actual delivering, we shared the responsibilities among the six countries. So, for example, Malta, we were responsible for the professional reflections at the beginning when the students came, the organization of the intensive program, sorting out Moodle, because we are the coordinating institution.
It's the onerous task,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, Malta is the coordinating institution. So we also took on the IT support when it comes. This is why Moodle was a platform which we had to agree upon.
Perhaps you could describe very briefly what Moodle is.
Moodle is the virtual learning environment, basically, which has served us as a repository where all the documents, whether it's the course descriptions, whether it's the website, whether it's the postings which the students are doing, if we wanted to give them a task or an assignment or upload a resource, everything is there in this depository. anybody who has access, of course you need to have access, you belong to a group, you get access to it, can easily monitor the work which has been going on in all these study units. And if you want to go back to something which has been discussed already, or if you know you want to plan ahead, it gives you the facility to upload things which you may want to share with the whole group or with even part of the group. I mentioned earlier the national groupings and the international groupings. One of the other issues which cropped up as we were discussing and planning this marvelous program, as we would like to look upon it, was the language issue. The course is in English, but for some of us, English was not our first language. And our Swedish, Norwegian and German colleagues constantly reminded us of that. So we had, as it were, native students paired up with non-native English. For the purpose, Maltese students were considered as natives along with the Irish and the Scottish colleagues. Students, we even gave attention to this detail of how to pair up students so that they could support each other. And as I said, this has all been possible via this virtual learning environment. We had also had good technical support. So we had one person who is part of the University of Malta staff as well, again within the Faculty of Education, who has been providing the technical support, started off by designing the brochures, the logo, the website, and you know, if there's a technical hitch, Mario has been referred to, Mario Camilleri, who is doing all this, has been referred to by the students as the computer man. So whenever they see him, you know, or if they have a problem, there's the technical area, and he immediately responds and helps the students out with this.
Thank you very, very much for coming to talk to us about this master's program. Thank you.
If you would like further details about the University of Malta's research projects or any other information, please access our website at www.um.edu.mt. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.